Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Mulman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. Got a handful of things to cover tonight, and definitely want to touch on taxes before we get down to the bottom of the hour. For those that are tuning in for the first time in a little while, we've changed formats, and so the first half hour, I pretty much just talk, and the second half hour is your opportunity to chime in. So if you'd like to call in tonight about anything we talk about, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326, and we'll pick you up at the bottom half of the hour. So if you hop on, just hang on until the bottom half of the hour so that we can get through everything, and then we can talk about it. So that format seems to work pretty well. I have co-host Dave here with me again tonight. He'll be joining us during the second half hour, and so there we go. Anyway, let's get right to it here. As always, I'd like to start with the random political rhetoric generator because it's just fun. Tonight's isn't very fun. It's actually like real political rhetoric, which is kind of scary, but whatever. It's what was randomly generated. So tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is, my supporters know that I believe in our brave firefighters, our promise for tomorrow, and our basic democratic principles. You could actually, like, real people would actually say that. That's whatever. It's upbeat. And I don't know. I think it's maybe appropriate. On a personal note this week, I had, those of you that know me, I had LASIK surgery done back in August, and it did not go quite as planned. I had the touch-up procedure done on Thursday this week. I can see. I'm so excited. It's actually quite wonderful. And I couldn't be happier right now to be able to see. So, you know, it's all right to be upbeat, I guess. All right. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk about, because there's a lot of confusion about this out there, is this Heartbleed virus that's been around. And I know, you know, we usually talk politics, but most of you or many of you know that I'm also an IT guy. And so this Heartbleed thing basically affected websites and other things that use the OpenSSL encryption algorithm. Many websites use it because OpenSSL is free. And basically on websites, if you go to a website that says HTTPS colon instead of just HTTP colon, you're using a secure socket layer implementation, SSL connection there. And so there are two primary SSL providers. One is for pay, and that one was not affected. Only the free was affected. And what it really meant was that your data could have been intercepted. It's not so much that there's a risk ongoing of the data being stolen, but if you haven't changed your password, since perhaps someone intercepted your password, there is a risk there that your data could be stolen. Now, most financial institutions were not using the free version of OpenSSL or just the SSL protocol. So most banks, you're probably going to be fine. But there were a lot of other services that were affected, things like Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Tumblr, Google, anything you do on Google, if you have a Google account, Yahoo, anything you do on Yahoo, Amazon Web Services, Etsy, I don't even know what that is, GoDaddy, Flickr, Minecraft, Netflix, YouTube, and something called SoundCloud, which again, I don't know what that is, no financial things were affected, and to date, the only thing government-wise, actually that is financial too, is USAA, which is, I believe, the credit union for veterans and their families. So if you have accounts on that stuff, you should definitely change the passwords. Also things like Dropbox, GitHub, let's see, there's all kinds of silly little things out there. Basically, if you're accessing it for free, if you're not paying for the service, chances are you just need to change your password. And changing your password now, most of these places, I saw the bug fix go out because I also use SSL for various things. So I saw the bug fix go out. It should simply be a matter of changing your password now. And You should change your password to something relatively complex. Use a combination of numbers, letters, both uppercase and lowercase, and symbols, which are basically things above your number keys that are shifted. Right? You hold shift and hit those crazy symbols up there. And one of the good ways to do it is to come up with some sentence that you're going to remember and then change the letters around or do something like that and make it an acronym for the sentence. And that way it becomes really hard because in your mind you know what that sentence is, but for a password cracker, especially a brute force password cracker, they start on dictionary words first. So if you made your password zookeeper one, it would be easier than if you had some crazy thing. So anyway, I just wanted to get that out there because a lot of people have asked me about that in the past week. There's been a lot of confusion out there. The bug fix is already out, so now it's just a matter of changing your passwords on all those sites. All right, so back to the good news. A story here about a judge saying that flashing headlights to warn passing motorists of police up ahead is a protected action of free speech. And so you are, according to, well, this is now, let's see, which court was this? This does not say which court. Oh, it's the Oregon Court of Appeals. There's been rulings in other courts as well that flashing your headlights is not causing a public safety hazard. It's not improper illumination, which people have been written up for before. It is an act of free speech. You are telling oncoming motorists of something up ahead. And that's exactly what you're trying to convey, and that's exactly what you're doing, and that is a protected act. And I think that that's a good thing. I think that people should be allowed to communicate on the roads. And for that matter, I've flashed my headlights at people to warn them of a wreck up ahead or something going on up ahead, telling people slow down or something going on up ahead, right? I mean, that if anything, it should lean the other way, that you can actually be, you know, helping a safety thing rather than waiting for people who are speeding to come around the corner, see a policeman, and cram on their brakes and whatever. An interesting poll here closer to home in Kentucky. 8% of people in Kentucky don't drink water. 8%. So about 1 in every 12 people just don't drink water, which I find is really interesting. And there are a lot of people out there that are just have a weird aversion to drinking water. I don't know why. I personally have always kind of liked water, but it's very strange. 5 in 10 adults say they drink tap water most often. 4 in 10 say they drink bottled water most often. Only 4% of adults claim to get their drinking water primarily from a well. And the adults who don't regularly drink tap water, when asked why, 4 in 10 of them said that they don't like the taste. With women being more likely to object to the taste than men, which actually makes sense genetically. They're more sensitive to such things. Other reasons that were given, about over 10% said they were concerned the water wasn't safe, which that can be a concern in some places. About 13% claim that they have easy access to bottled water, and that's why they don't drink the tap water. And then another 11% say it's because of the chemicals in the water, which I don't know why that wouldn't have been lumped in with worrying it's unsafe, but whatever. So somewhere around 25% of people don't drink it because they think it's unsafe or has chemicals in it. Just kind of interesting. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of weird, and I was interested in it and thought you might be too. Let's see. One of the stories that came out this week, there was a grant given to the Northern Kentucky Health District, $300,000 from a foundation or a nonprofit or not-for-profit group, a 501c4 in Cincinnati, to specifically lobby the Kentucky legislature for a smoking ban, which, boy, that's great. I love it when tax dollars get used to get taxing agencies to lobby for laws that agency gets to enforce. Those of you that know me know that I've been a very outspoken opponent to the smoking bans. You know, in Northern Kentucky, we just don't need it. There was just another story here recently about Buffalo Bob's in Florence going smoke-free by choice. And actually stopped in at a Waffle House for the first time in a couple of months last night. And they're smoke-free again. They had gone smoke-free, and then they went back to smoking, and now they're smoke-free again. So we'll see how long it lasts this time, I guess. I don't know. The point is that people have options. Every type of cuisine that's available in all of Northern Kentucky counties anyway is available in a non-smoking venue. And, you know, at the end of the day, no one puts a gun to anybody's head and makes them walk into a restaurant or bar or anywhere else that allows smoking. And, you know, our group up here, Northern Kentucky Choice, which was formed to fight the smoking bans, has always promoted putting a sign on the door, if the place allows smoking, that basically says, hey, we smoke here. And so you know before you ever walk in if there's smoke or not. And then once we got the business community informed on what we were doing, that the signs cost $5, they last 5 years, that, you know, it'll mean that they never have another customer that comes in and then demands their meal free because I didn't know it was smoking in here, because that happens all the time. They bought in, and they were proponents of it, and many of them wanted to actually give us money to buy the signs, and we're not set up to do that. So, you know, I think that there's a common sense answer to this that I think you'd have widespread buy-in almost voluntarily anyway. As I mentioned, we had a number of businesses trying to buy signs off of us that didn't exist that, you know, we couldn't take the money from them because we weren't set up to take money from people. But, yeah, they're a 501c3. It's the Health Foundation of Greater Cincinnati. It's the group that sent $300,000 to the Northern Kentucky Health District to push a smoking ban in Frankfort. Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate that. I'm glad to see my tax dollars are hard at work. Interesting story. Local community up here had an article. It's known as Fort Wright. They're going to be debt-free soon. And by debt-free, like completely debt-free, all of their bonds will be complete. They've had a push off buying and doing some various things to do this. But the current city council there is very fiscally conservative and specifically sought to pay off all the debt that the city had from previous administrations. And they've worked very hard at it. They've made cuts. They've done all kinds of interesting things to make it work. But basically what it comes down to is at the end of, is it next year? Yeah, I think it's, Yes, the final payment will be made during this budget cycle, the 2014-2015 budget. They will pay off the final $350,000 that they owe. And that's it. They're completely debt-free as a city, which, think about that, opens them up to do whatever they want. They're at the whim of no one, at the will of no one. No creditors can tell them, oh, I'm sorry, you can't do that because that might violate the terms of your loan. They can do whatever they want to service the people of that city. And it serves as an example that it can be done. Certainly a city is easier than a state to clean up because its scope is smaller. And certainly a state is easier than the federal government. But it can be done if people are elected that are focused on doing it. And I think that's important. I love the fact that the story's out there. I think that it is a very positive thing that shows that when you elect people who are dedicated to running a city correctly, it will get run correctly. And so that's why city elections are important. They're all nonpartisan. So for your friends out there, I'm hoping none of my audience does this, but for your friends out there who do, that use the straight ticket button, first of all, you shouldn't be using that anyway. But secondly, and more importantly, your city elections don't get voted on when you do that. And for the love of God, don't do the every other person or the, you know, voting for the top five people. Don't do that. I mean, if you don't know, don't vote. But you need to be informed about who you're voting for. And you need to, you know, really encourage other people to vote for good candidates that will stand up for your city and do the right thing. And you can have results just like Fort Wright, where they will be completely debt-free at the end of this upcoming budget year. Really cool. And so congratulations to those guys. In the story, they mentioned Taylor Mill, which is another Northern Kentucky community up here, is also completely debt-free. So congrats to them as well. I think that's, again, it shows it can be done if the right people are elected and are focused on doing that. Shifting gears to the state level, the governor has started to veto things And one of the things that was vetoed was the public-private partnership, or P3 bill. And we've talked about that on the show a little bit in the past. You know, my main objection to P3s is that it creates monopolies. They're basically government-created monopolies that they then hand over to corporations. And oftentimes it's done on some sort of ridiculously long lease. So, for instance, in the city of Chicago, they signed a 99-year lease for all parking in Chicago. And they granted a monopoly to this company. No one can build a parking garage. No one can create a new parking space. It must run through this company if you want to have a parking spot within the city limits of Chicago. And lo and behold, within the first 3 years, the parking rates tripled because there is no competition. And there's no political pressure to keep those parking rates down. Whereas at a city level, right, the city has the electorate causes the pressure to keep the parking rates reasonable. Because if you can't afford to park, if your parking rates are too high, it really can cut into especially low-income budgets. And so the voters, theory, are helping to keep those rates in check when the government runs those. But when the government then turns it over to a company and basically hands them the keys and says, here you go, do whatever you want, it's yours for the next 99 years. And I believe the city of Chicago got $2 billion for that, which sounds like a lot. But a city the size of Chicago, if I remember right, they burnt through that $2 billion in 1 year. I think they managed to burn every dollar that they got out of that deal the first year they got the money. And now they have 96 years of this lease left. Congratulations. That was not a good deal. So the governor vetoed our P3, as they're known, public-private partnership, P3 bill. But the reason he vetoed it wasn't because he opposes P3s. The reason he gave, anyway, was because up here in northern Kentucky, there's been quite a bit of controversy about building a toll bridge to supplement the existing interstate bridge for I-71 and 75. And the people in northern Kentucky, many, many leaders, many business, small business leaders, and many community leaders, and many elected officials are hardcore against putting tolls on the bridge. And you have to understand the situation here is that the people who are going to pay the most on that bridge are people that live in northern Kentucky, because just based on how things are set up, most of the jobs are over in Cincinnati, right across the river. And so people here have been adamantly against this project. And very loudly, adamantly against this project. And so Arnold Simpson, who is a state representative, a Democrat from northern Kentucky, wrote an amendment to specifically exempt or prevent, rather, northern Kentucky from having to fund an interstate toll bridge. The wording was basically it prevented the use of P3s to fund the creation of an interstate authority between Kentucky and Ohio to build a bridge, which made it pretty clear what it was for. It was to stop tolls on the Brent Spence Bridge or the bridge that would supplement it. The governor gave the reason of vetoing this bill is because of that amendment. He says he doesn't like that amendment, that this piece of infrastructure is so critical that we need to make sure that the law passes, but without that exemption. That was his reasoning for vetoing the bill. And I've heard that the fix is in the State House, that the State House is going to strip the Simpson Amendment, which is what it's known as, out of the bill, repass it, and send it over to the Senate. And the Senate is the one that is where it's going to get decided. Now, I've talked to some of my friends downstate, a lot of my Tea Party and Liberty folks downstate on this issue in particular, and they are just fit to be tied with the whole thing, right? Not only they were also a little jealous, I think, but they don't want the P3s either. P3s are basically, the state is running out of money. That's why they want to use these, because it's corporate financing of what should be infrastructure, basic infrastructure projects. And they're granting monopolies to these companies, because without the monopoly, no company would build it. Why would a company build $3 million worth of road if somebody could build another road right next to it and charge less? Right, they lose the incentive to build these projects if there's competition. These big companies are specifically looking for assets, protected assets, to which there will be no competition, and they can guarantee income for a long period of time. And by guaranteeing income, I'm talking about monopoly control of core infrastructure that people are forced to use. And by force, I mean whether it's an economic thing, like up here in northern Kentucky, where if you need to cross a bridge to go to work, well, guess what? You're getting a toll. Too bad. Or whatever. The point is that I don't like how all this is going down anyway. I don't like that the state is the one deciding the fate of northern Kentucky. I don't like that, I don't like the P3s. I think there may be a role for them somewhere. I just haven't found it yet. I don't know. Every instance I've seen of it has not turned out well. I just don't like Frankfurt having control over these projects. It's the same reason I opposed the proposal for the horse racing and getting casinos. I don't like the creation of monopolies. Monopolies are never good for consumers. Why in the world would we want our government to artificially create monopolies? They're not good for consumers. If anything, we need to have a rollback in regulations and let the market compete. And there are times where there are so-called natural monopolies, generally created because of geography, right? It's unreasonable that there's going to be 17 bridges across the Ohio River that actually connect to something useful, right? That's just not going to happen. But there needs to be bridges, right? Their bridges need to be there. A better example, and one I like to use, is sewer companies. Within a community, it is unreasonable to expect that there would be 17 sewer companies. There's just, quite frankly, not enough geography to put that many sewer pipes in. That's a lot of sewer pipes. And so the question becomes, how do you handle that? Now, certainly you could grant a monopoly to a company, but then, boy, they've got everybody in a hammerlock in that community for a very long time. What's your recourse on that? And in fact, in many ways, that's the problem we have in northern Kentucky, and I know in Louisville as well, where they've created these quasi-gov agencies, the sewer districts, that aren't accountable to the people. They're not elected, but they're in charge of monopoly infrastructure. Now imagine if the sewer districts also had the pressure of profit motive from their shareholders. What if the sewer district actually had to turn a profit every year? Can you imagine? Oh, and there's no competition to keep prices in check. Can you imagine what you would be paying on your sewer bill? I mean, it's bad enough as it is because they don't have direct the public does not – they're not directly accountable to the public already. There is a time, I believe, for government, and I've talked about this extensively with a lot of people, and there's arguments and whatever. I'm a minarchist, so I do believe that there is a time and a place for government, and I do believe that monopoly infrastructure, things where there are natural monopolies, is a place for government, because if I have to compare government versus a corporate monopoly, I'm going to lean towards the government, because at least in the government, I have a voice. I have some sort of recourse if that government agency is abusing me. I can go to my elected officials and say, hey, this guy's abusing me. And if they abuse enough people, you can start a movement, and that's been done before. Whereas in a corporation, if they've got a monopoly hammerlock, you've pretty much just got to wait until technology overcomes that monopoly hammerlock. That was a complaint about phone companies for a very long time, and not to say anything about the phone company here because I work for them, so they're not a bad company, not at all. But technology is changing, and the hammerlock that phone companies used to have over residential phone service, and for that matter, business phone service, is gone. You can do voice over IP with cable. You have a cell phone. There are other technologies that have come along that have – excuse me. There are new technologies that have overcome those old natural monopolies, and that's a cool thing. I love the fact that technology – can take over those old monopolies, and then you let the free market just decide the whole mess. And I think that's great. That is obviously the preferred scenario, is a competitive free market scenario. But as I mentioned before, until it becomes reasonable that in a city with eighth-acre lots, you can do something else with sewage other than put it in a pipe and shove it somewhere else, there's going to be some sort of control. Now, I don't have a sewer, right? I live in the country, and I do so on purpose. I have a septic tank, and then it's my responsibility to maintain my septic operations, not the city's, and I don't have to worry about having a quarter-acre lot so that plenty of room for my septic tank to work. But there are places where that doesn't work. Water, another thing. I mean, you can drill wells, yes, but there are places that you just can't drill a well. And you can't have 17 water companies because, again, where are you putting 17 water lines? You can't have 17 phone companies. Where are you going to put all these wires? How many – and are the poles – if each company has to put in their own poles, you're going to have so many freaking poles, it's going to look like a forest with, like, deranged leaves that are just wires. I mean, you're not going to have – a reasonable scenario there. You know, and yes, while phones are being replaced, it same goes for electric companies. You can't have 17 power companies with 17 different sets of poles servicing every person. And for that matter, when it comes down to it, roads. You can't have 17 roads that lead away from your house. There's one road. And given that, you know, a corporation can pretty much do whatever they please, especially if they have a monopoly, if they decide they don't like you, maybe they put a $50 toll at the end of your driveway. Everybody else is free. You're paying $50 a day. They could do that. There's no check and balance on a monopoly. None. That's the key. Anyway, the point is, I got way off track here. The P3 bill has been vetoed. And we're hearing that the fix is in the House, that the House is going to strip the amendment off, and they're going to repass it. What's interesting, though, is that given the way the vote went down the first time, they could just repass it as is. Kentucky is a weird state in that just because the bill was passed with a veto-proof majority doesn't mean the governor can't veto it. And what's even more interesting is that the General Assembly can simply repass a vetoed bill with a simple majority. Again, it doesn't require a supermajority, apparently. At least according to the news article I read today, we're one of a handful of states that just requires another simple majority to pass the same bill that passed with a simple majority the first time. That's weird. Whatever. Anyway, the point, I guess, is that P3s in general, I'm not a big fan, and we need to keep an eye on this because I'm hearing the fix is in, that they're going to run this right through. Oh, boy, we're almost at the bottom of the hour. I haven't gotten to everything. I got to hurry here. All right. Let's see. Interesting thing, Beshear signed the cannabis oil bill. For those of you that were watching the medical marijuana fight, that's basically what this is. But it's extremely limited. It's only for medical research hospitals and for FDA approval or testing trials, which the FDA will never do because they're run by the pharmaceutical companies. So, the point is that it is a very limited bill, but hopefully, and we'll see how that works out, for the handful of folks that really do have a true medical condition that this may help, hopefully it does actually, it does allow them to do that. One of the things, boy, I spent too much time on the other topics, this Nevada situation with the cattle. If you haven't been paying attention to this, there's been a big fight out in Nevada about ranchers, cattle, and land rights. It's been quite an interesting mess. The Bureau of Land Management back in the early 90s declared a certain section of the Nevada as a reserve, as a nature preserve, and as such basically banned a rancher from allowing his cattle to graze in an area where his family had been grazing cattle since the 1840s. So basically 150 years after they started, the feds came in and go, you can't do that anymore. Now, that much we know. We know that the federal government also claims that the reason they took action was because $1.1 million worth of land rights or land use payments were due, which is kind of weird because it's like, I thought they weren't allowed to be on the land at all. So I have to wonder if maybe they just, charged something, whether it's they charged the money or they claim there was a charge but refused payment, or if they made it so exorbitantly high compared to everywhere else that no one would ever reasonably pay that. Whatever it was, essentially the fight came down to the Bureau of Land Management came in to seize this guy's cattle for back payment of the $1.1 million. The cattleman, the rancher, said that the feds had no authority there because it had been state land, and they did not have the authority to come in and take state land from state. It escalated from there, obviously. The family involved, I know the son was taking video from like a mile or a half mile away, something like that. And the cops, the Bureau of Land Management, came up and told him he had to go, that he wasn't allowed to be there, all this kind of stuff. And when he refused, they basically tasered him and then took him into custody, didn't charge him with anything. They were still deciding what to charge him with. They just took him into custody, which I have a huge problem with the fact that you can take somebody into custody without actually putting charges against them. You're arresting them without cause is what you're doing. Anyway, they also set up these extremely offensive First Amendment areas and actually hung signs that said First Amendment area. I'm staring at a picture of one of them, putting up that orange construction fencing stuff to basically say, this is where you have First Amendment rights, nowhere else, just here. And as all this kind of escalated, then the militia groups started getting involved and started getting upset. And politicians were getting involved and getting upset. And this whole situation really spun out of control very quickly, to the point where there were militias that were on site that came in from out of state. They tried to knock down the Bureau of Land Management's fencing. There was all kinds of inflammatory language going around, comparisons to Ruby Ridge, a lot of ugly happening. And as of yesterday, the Bureau of Land Management claims that they're going to pull out. They left the cattle, and they're leaving, and that's what they claim. And now the politicians are begging the militia people to go home because the situation is still extremely tense, extremely out of control. And the Bureau of Land Management is still planning on continuing action. They're just going to keep doing it through the courts and administratively, they claim, and not take direct action, or so they say. As far as what's actually been done by his cattle, the true quote-unquote damage, right, they said one feral cow was hit by an automobile in a recreation area, and cows are sometimes or frequently seen to be crossing a road. I think there's a joke in there somewhere. Overton Wildlife Refuge, which, by the way, is what we're talking about here. This is that land that's supposed to be federally protected. An employee there was attacked by a bull. A crop was destroyed by the cattle on private land. Let's see. The Mesquite Heritage Community Garden was damaged by trespass cattle. And the Mesquite Golf Course was damaged by trespass cattle. Now, I don't know all the details. Again, it could very well be that they've got some weird laws out west about grazing and that. So I don't know all the details about it. And this, by the way, is the Bureau of Land Management's report that I'm reading from, by the way. That's why it's quite so negative. They're claiming it'll cost $400,000 with a matching grant to restore the Southwest Willow Flycatcher Habitat along the Virgin River, $160,000 for the Southern Nevada Public Land Management Act to restore the that's the same thing, okay, to also put more money in to restore this flycatcher habitat, whatever that's all about. Now, the one thing that's got other people up in arms is that a non-government organization, NGO, you know, private-public partnership, whatever, is trying to set up a solar farm on the same property. And so originally we were told it was about protecting turtles, and then all of a sudden it came out that the government was killing the turtles, and so that story went away. And then it came out that, Harry Reid's son is on the city commission or county commissioner, I think it's city commission, and inked this deal with the Chinese government to put up a solar farm in the Nevada desert. And that's what this probably is really all about. And so it's a mess. You know, the problem is that the media is so choppy in the reporting, and I can't get some answers, key answers I need. And that's, you know, there's been a lot of people kind of leaning on me to get directly involved and get excited about this, but I need to know a few things. I mean, was he legitimately skipping out on his bill, right? Was it a legit bill for grazing? I don't know. I don't know all the laws in Nevada. I don't know all that stuff. And so I can't get real excited about that if he's really breaking the law, if it's really trespassing, if it's really that, then yeah, okay, I'm not real hip to trespassing and damaging private property. But if it's something where the law has always granted them this and then they did something to go around it or whatever, well, okay, you know, there's always that gray area. I don't know. But it's gotten crazy. And now, even with BLM leaving the area, there's a real mess there because the militia is still there. The politicians that came in originally to ask BLM to leave are now saying, militia guys, could you leave? It's kind of a crazy thing here. We're ready. We need to go. So it's pretty wild. The whole thing is pretty darn wild. So I want to talk about taxes, and I know I'm over, and I'm going to get through this as fast as I can. So if you're calling in, by the way, you can do that, and we'll take calls here in just a minute at 858-683-1326 after the break. Tax day. Oh, my. I tell you, every year, and I should have probably just spent the whole show on taxes, but I am so frustrated with taxes at this point. I've got an interesting tax situation this year that no one seems to be able to give me an answer to. Now, in theory, I'm going to get a refund, but I don't want to submit my taxes, my tax return, until I get an answer to this crazy question. And it's really, really a goofy thing. I don't even want to get into the details of it. It would be so much easier if there was just a flat sales tax on stuff. I mean, all the time and effort and energy and extra employees and all this extra stuff that the economy suffers through because we have all these crazy tax laws. I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I'm not a huge fan of the fair tax. I'm not against it per se. I just think it's overly complicated. I think you can make it a lot simpler. You know, the whole prebate thing is kind of silly. Why prebate it? Just don't charge it to begin with, and then you don't have to send out a bunch of checks to everybody in America. But even that, even the fair tax is better than the system we have now, which is a system of subjective, you know, punishments and rewards for engaging in behavior that some bureaucrat or some politician managed to get slapped into the obscenely large tax code that most people have no clue is there or do or don't or whatever, that most of it's loopholes for corporate donors or big donors. I mean, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And I'm so frustrated because my answer should be easy. Yet I'm staring at a four-page document on the answer to one question, and it's got a whole bunch of ifs, ands, and buts in the thing, and it's like, I don't even know. And it's really, it really shouldn't matter. It's a fraction. If what's going on is my income, it's a fraction of my income, but it changes my return, which then, you know, if I get too much of a return, then I'll get fined and penalized and everything else. So, it's so very frustrating. I still, if there's going to be a tax, it should be a tax on new goods. It should exempt food and shelter, which gets rid of the regressiveness of a sales tax, and just be done with it and leave it be and make it reasonable. And then you focus, again, on paying off all your debts, and you cut all that stuff back, the stuff you don't need, focus on what's necessary, save the money, and we end up with a reasonable tax code that doesn't kill us, that doesn't just slaughter us with fees and stupidity. All right, I'm way over. I'm going to stop right there. If you'd like to call in, the number here is 858-683-1326, 858-683-1326. When we come back, we'll at least talk to Dave, and if you call in, we'll talk to you. We'll be back here in just a few minutes on the My View Matters Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. I'm sorry. I'm still steaming over the tax thing from before the break. It's just so frustrating. There's got to be – any system is simpler than what we have now. Anything. I'm just so very, very frustrated. Anyway, if you want to call in and talk about anything we've talked about, you can do so by calling 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And, Dave, are you going to be joining us here? I think he'll be joining us here in a minute. I guess while we're waiting on Dave to join in here, he's taking care of something else here real quick. The tax thing, just it's out of control. We have so many insane tax laws, and then they dumped Obamacare in on top of it to make it even more complex and even more crazy. And I don't know, it just makes anything than what we have now. And I see we've got Dave here. Dave, what are your thoughts, sir?
Oh, you just mentioned Obamacare. Obamacare sucks. And you're right. It takes a previously unnecessarily complex tax code and makes it more complex. It just adds fuel to the fire.
You know, there's got to be an easier way to do all this. I mean, I have a chart here, and I didn't quite get to it. I wanted to bring it up on another topic we didn't quite get to, but, the number of rules that exist, federal rules that have existed, has skyrocketed since 1976. In 1976, there were 7,401 rules. That sounds like a lot, right? 7,401. Man, that's a lot of rules. Today, we have 169,593 rules on the books. That's a ridiculous number of rules.
You were talking about the fair tax, and I'm not exactly a fair tax advocate, but I completely agree with you that the fair tax is definitely a hell of a lot better than what we've got now. I am definitely an advocate of the flat tax.
Yeah, I think, you can make the whole thing simpler by making it a straight sales tax, except on, and as I mentioned, you get rid of, you make an
yep.
exemption for food and shelter, right? The basic necessities of life that everybody has to have a basic thing. And some people say, well, oh my gosh, that means that rich people could have like multi-million dollar mansions and not pay taxes. Well, yeah, that's true. But Engel's law, which is entertainingly a socialist thing where the whole, disproportional thing comes from, the more people make, the less of a percentage they spend on food and shelter. And so if you exempt food and shelter, a tax that is on sales, on new sales, is inherently progressive in that people with more money buy more stuff that's not food and shelter. So
yeah,
let's
right.
just do something. Let's just do something simple. I mean, let's just make it that easy. I would much rather pay a tax all along the way every time I buy something new rather than pay a tax, once a year. Well, you pay it all the time, but have to, at the end of the year, rectify the dang numbers and spend hours and hours and hours and hours searching down, in my case, one stupid rule, trying to figure out how it applies. I mean, I've probably spent the better part of 10 to 16 hours on this at this point, and I'm about to strangle somebody. It just drives me nuts.
I don't really know what the answer is, other than, you know, I agree with you. Anything, almost anything, you know, is better than what we have now. I think the reason that it's that the current system is being protected. I don't think it has anything to do with the taxes that are generated from it. You know, that it's working. I don't think it has anything to do with that at all. I think that the reason that the current system is being protected is quite simply, if we had anything that made any sense at all, we would not need nearly so many, federal employees, which is just, you know, more spending of, you know, those dollars to begin with anyway.
Yeah, well, and there's no doubt. I mean, bureaucracies have a tendency to try to at least protect their turf, and then their secondary goal is to grow their turf. And these rules that have been made are, you know, they're not the law. They're the administrative regulations that were created by the agencies, created by the law. And, you know, they get applied in new and different ways all the time. You know, up here in northern Kentucky and also in other places all along the state, anywhere there's a river or a creek or a stream or anything like that, the Clean Water Act was initially envisioned for, you know, extreme pollution scenarios. Now it's being applied in ways that I'm quite sure, never debated or conceived. The idea that rainwater is now considered a pollutant to streams, I mean, even today, that sounds ludicrous. I mean, it's water. I mean, okay, how is that a pollutant? Well, too much of it's a pollutant. That's the problem, is that they create enabling legislation to let these agencies do whatever, and then the agencies go nuts. And then every once in a while, the politicians decide to chime in and change something for the good of the public or whatever, and it ends up backfiring and just creating more rules and more regulations and more red tape and more of a mess. And at some point, I mean, somebody's got to hit the reset button and just scrap everything and start over.
Yep, I would agree with that. The reason that they do that with the rainwater labeling it a pollutant, it's not that it's a pollutant, but, you know, I mean, just consider the ramifications of it. If they call it what it actually is, water, and they just, you know, leave it alone, they can't do anything with it. But if they call it a pollutant, they can control it.
Yeah. Well, and that's just like calling carbon dioxide a pollutant. I mean, carbon dioxide is what we breathe out. I mean, and certainly, you know, if there was way too much carbon dioxide, there'd be a problem. But we're not in a scenario where we're oxygen deprived. Now, certainly there are things like nitrous oxide and other pollutants that legitimately you don't want to breathe, especially not in heavy concentrations. Heavy metals, those type of things, you don't want to be consuming those. But we're not talking about heavy metals. We're not talking about poisonous gas, you know, poisonous pollutants. We're talking about carbon dioxide. We're talking about water. And it gets to the level of silly, where the problem is, and this is where I think the problem is, these agencies tend to attract people who are very passionate about an issue. In many ways, for instance, it parallels with the whole library issue that's been going on, right? The people that are running the libraries are very passionate about libraries, and that's great. I think that, you know, they are probably some very good stewards of the library. They're very passionate about their library, and that's why they're on that board. The problem is that just like the library board, these federal agencies don't have a direct check and balance. There's not a public ability to say, stop, 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 you're going too far. And because it's not direct representation. In the case of the library boards, they're trying to jack up taxes without any public input. These federal agencies are creating new rules without public input. No check and balance there, right? It's kind of the same problem with the P3s, where government, the legislators create this ability, and they hand it off to somebody else, and here's your monopoly. Good luck. You know, And without a system of checks and balances with the public, it's very easy for people who are very zealous about these issues to go way overboard on them. I mean, I've seen this in the professional world where people will get out of control and the manager will come in and go, whoa, slow down. That is like 100 times more complex than what we actually need. And I think that's the same thing. I think that oftentimes the people working in these agencies are very passionate about what they believe in and are very passionate about doing the right thing, but they are blinded in many ways by their own passion. And they lack the accountability to the public that is very, very necessary in any agency that can raise taxes or create rules.
I want to get back to something that you mentioned earlier. You were talking about the carbon dioxide, oxygen, being oxygen deprived and whatnot. There's a very general misunderstanding in the public eye about that whole situation. It's just most people just don't have their facts straight on it. Do you know the percentage of oxygen that's in the air that we breathe?
I don't remember the exact number. I know it's under 50%. I want to say it's like 20s or 30%, somewhere in there. I can't remember.
It's in the 20s. The majority of the air that we breathe is nitrogen.
Yeah. That's why the sky is blue.
Yeah, that's right. We're really, really, really far away from being oxygen deprived, or having an overabundance of carbon dioxide to the point that it would be a problem.
Right.
It gets down to that same old, argument. And my comment to almost every single one of those, kind of eco-terrorist arguments, my counter-argument is, we're human beings. Don't flatter yourself. We don't have that kind of control over Mother Nature. We just don't.
Yeah.
Not even collectively, we don't. We're part of it.
Well, I think at the local level, you can do a lot of damage, I mean, especially if you just nonchalantly dump, pollutants or specifically try. You could create a lot of damage locally, at a local level.
Agreed, but the big argument to carbon dioxide, you brought up a great point. It's what we breathe out.
Right.
So when you start talking about the overabundance of carbon dioxide, we're putting too much carbon dioxide in the air. It's like, okay, well, the first and easiest way to take care of that, if it in fact were a problem, would be to start talking about population control. But I'm pretty sure that's not where any of you that are, complaining about the overabundance of carbon dioxide are actually going with the argument. I still have yet for anybody to actually tell me where they're going.
No, there are some that go that direction. There are absolutely some that do. It's not made very public because, you're talking about killing people or, really infringing on a natural level. One of the core things, sterilizations and killing people and letting people starve to death. And none of that's good. There can be nothing good that can come from population control. And we see plenty of that. A friend of mine just came back from adopting some more kids in China. And, they have zero regard for human life there. Population control, the orphanages that these kids live in a really bad situation, and we certainly don't want to become that. We don't want to be a place where, some other interest comes above the individual. There are things that are important. We don't want pollution. We don't want those type of things. But there is no end game here. The only way to stop carbon dioxide production is to stop the things that produce it, and that's animals. And then that, starts to conflict with natural ecosystems. Are you going to start killing off, certain types of animals? What are you going to do? Are you going to, kill off a bunch of people? Well, there's nothing wrong with planting more plants to try to offset, right? I'm good with that. I think that's a good thing in general. Nothing else. It looks pretty. But
No, I'm saying you affect the plant. You affect the plant life if you affect the animal life.
Yeah, well, there's that too. I mean, it's an ecosystem,
you know,
right? I mean,
right, and we're symbiotic.
Yeah, we've only got about a minute and a half left, Dave. You got any final thoughts?
Did you want to talk at all about the situation in Nevada? You want to save that for another time?
We can talk about it. I mean, go ahead, throw your thoughts in anyway.
My general thoughts are that, you know, I think everybody just needs to calm down a little bit. You know, the people, the, you know, the ranchers, you know, they have a lot to say, and they should, you know, say whatever they want. But everybody else that's getting involved on both sides, they don't even have skin in the game. It's like, you know, well, what are they even doing?
Yeah, and, you know, I think a lot of that's being driven by the fact that the economy's bad, people are still upset. I think there's just a lot of general public anger out there anyway. And I do agree with you that at some point you've got to be able to step back, take a deep breath, and say, how do we solve this problem peacefully? We're out of time. Thanks, Dave, for chiming in. I apologize for eating into your time today with the other stuff, but I appreciate everybody else tuning in today. Tune in again next time for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. Listen to the rest of the shows on the network throughout the week. And until next time, I hope everybody has a good week. Thanks, everybody.